Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Abgenommen bedauert.
Frequency.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna, as those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives, and I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. Don't get me wrong, I love Budapest. From Budapest come goulashes and shardashes. Shardashes being something you dance and goulash being something you eat if you go for all that paprika. Me, I love it. So, when I got that telegram, I took the first train to Hungary. Maybe I better tell you about the telegram first. Dear Mr. Lime, it said, my bank is going to be robbed and I need your help. It was signed Fekete, evidently a man's name, nobody I knew. I knew all about bank robberies, however, and I was dying to help. Besides, as I say, I love paprika. So I started packing right away. And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the Third Man, in today's story, Too Many Crooks. Before calling at the bank, I stopped at a cute little flower shop I happened to notice across the way. Good morning. Would you give me something for my buttonhole? Why, Lily. Lily, what are you doing here?
We have some very pretty pink gardenias.
Oh, come on, Lily, don't tell me you don't remember me. And how are all the Corellis?
The who?
Now, give me that, Lily.
My name is Lulu.
Well, it used to be Lily, and you used to be a blonde. And the Corellis, as you know perfectly well, because you used to work for some of the best bank robbers in Central Europe. Well, what about it, honey?
Here are your gardenias, Harry. I'll get out of here.
Okay, honey, okay. No need to get in a hassle.
I'm telling you, Harry, get out.
I never was one to argue, so I took my gardenia across the street and wore it into the bank.
Mr. Fackerty will see Mr. Harry Lime.
You can go in now, Mr. Lime.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Fackerty will see you.
Yes, that's what I gathered.
This way, please.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Lime, yes. Will you please extinguish your cigarette? Mr. Fackerty does not approve of smoking.
Thanks. I'll bear that in mind.
Mr. Lime.
Come in. Come in and shut the door. There's a date.
Do you mind if I sit down, Mr. Fackerty, or is there a rule against that?
Sit down, sit down. You're a very impertinent young man, but I don't mind that. I'm an impertinent older man. We ought to get along together very nicely.
What's your proposition, Mr. Fackerty?
What do you mean?
That's what I said. What's your proposition?
Listen to me, Lime. I don't make propositions. I consider them.
Have it your own way, Fackerty. I'm a big boy now, and I'm not so easily impressed.
What do you mean, impressed?
All this big desk, double secretary, Mr. Fackerty. He'll see you now, Mr. Fackerty. He doesn't approve of smoking, busy executive hoopla. I may go down very well with the bumpkins who give you their money to invest. It doesn't mean a thing to me. You sent for me, didn't you? I crossed 3 national borders to get here and lost a lot of time, so don't ask me what's my proposition. What's yours, Mr. Fackerty?
very good indeed. You're just the man I hoped you were. Have a cigar.
Wouldn't that be breaking the rules?
I make the rules, Mr. Lyme, and I don't like cheap tobacco smoke. Nor do I enjoy being forced to distribute these very costly, custom-made Havanas to every, or what is it you call them, bumpkin, who comes into my office. I think you'll enjoy these.
Thanks.
Light?
Thanks.
Good. Now that we're a little more at ease, suppose you tell me something about yourself.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I wish you'd stop asking me what I mean by everything I say, Fackerty. I said why, and I meant why. You put private detectives on my trail. You found me. You made me a very substantial down payment on services to be rendered. And now, when I get here, you want me to tell you about myself. That's just plain silly, old man. It's obvious that if you went to all that trouble and expense to get me here, you knew about me already. I'm the one to ask the questions, not you.
Better and better. Mr. Lime, if you were just a little less notorious as a cook, I'd offer you a vice presidency in my bank.
I forgive the insult, Mr. Fackerty.
What do you mean, insult?
You go asking me what I mean again. I meant insult.
Now, don't you get pompous on me, Lime. You are a crook, a well-famous one. You don't want to deny that?
What I don't want is very simple, Mr. Fackerty. I don't want to be a vice president of your bank.
Oh? Oh, I follow you now. Don't worry, Lime.
Right.
I promised you $20,000.
That's right.
It's equivalent in Hungarian pesos.
Oh, wait a minute.
And you'll get it without having to serve as an officer of this
you
bank.
You promised me $20,000, old man. There weren't any gimmicks in the agreement about the joke money you folks pass off on each other locally. I know. I carry my own microscope for reading the fine type.
Very well, very well. $20,000 it is. Don't you want to know what I expect you to do for
us? Mr. Fackerty, you keep making me repeat myself. I told you before that I'm a big boy now. If you're giving me $20,000, I can relax, not worry about asking you silly questions. You're going to get around eventually to telling me what you expect me to do for it.
Did you ever hear of a bank giving a reward?
Yes, but only after a bank robbery.
Exactly. Only after a bank has been robbed. I'm reversing the procedure, Lyle. I'm giving the reward first.
Oh, so that's the little caper, is it? You want me to rob your bank for you?
Well, not at all, not at all. A reward is usually given for apprehending the thieves who have robbed the bank. What I want you to do, Harry, I may call you Harry?
Certainly, old man. Call me Harry if it gives you any fun.
Well, Harry, what I want you to do is to apprehend the robbers before the robbery is committed. Very clever, don't you think so? Have another cigar.
In my business, I may get in the way of an awful lot of screwy deals, but I can tell you that never in a long career have I been offered in complete seriousness a loopier proposition than Mr. Fackerty's. It seems the key to the whole affair was Mr. Fackerty's junior officer in the bank, a certain Mr. Fodor.
Lordislaus Fodor is the full name, Harry. He's one of our vice presidents.
I see.
I tell you this right now, the man is an unprincipled criminal.
Oh?
And come here and I'll show him to you. Come this way. You can see him through the glass panel.
Yes.
There he is.
Oh, that one?
Second desk to the right.
with all those silly hairs pasted over his bald head. That's the man.
He was not very dangerous to me.
Fodor? Dangerous? He is the brain of a backward bird and the charm of a worm. Now that I look back on it, I can't imagine how I ever persuaded myself to be jealous of
him. Jealous? I don't follow you, old man.
If I have a fault, Harry, it is this. I do tend to be jealous. Lulu often chides me about it, and I have promised to curb the instinct, but it is a part of my...
Lulu, you mean the girl in the flower shop across the way, that Lulu?
She is the only Lulu I know, Mr. Lyon. How does it happen that you are acquainted with her?
You see this carnation?
I see it, yes.
Lulu sold it to me, overcharged me, scandalously, as a matter of fact.
Well, Lulu is a working girl. She must live. How does it happen you know her?
What makes you think I do?
You know her name?
For one of the other customers called her that while I was still in the shop. As it happens, it was this little fellow you just pointed out to me over there, the vice president, Fodor.
The vice president.
I hate to keep harping on these commercial matters, frankly, old man, but just how does my $20,000 reward come into the picture?
Let us retire to my inner office, Harry. I never tell him.
Okay,
come.
Old man.
Sit down, please, Harry. Have another cigar.
My pockets are bulging with cigars now, old man. Let's concentrate on the 20,000.
Certainly, certainly. Oh, Miss Carver. Miss Carver.
Yes, Mr. Fackett?
No matter who calls, don't disturb me. Not on any account. I'm having an important conference.
Yes, Mr. Fackett.
Oh, jealousy, Harry. Jealousy is a terrible
thing.
Yes,
yes, certainly is. Now, about this reward.
Jealousy is the green-eyed monster who doth mock the meat it feeds on. That's how the poet Shakespeare expresses it.
The poet Shakespeare said a mouthful, and now...
But still, if it had not been for jealousy, I would never have followed this Fodor into Lulu's shop. And if I hadn't done that, I would never have discovered the digging.
Digging? What digging? What would you say, Harry, if I were to tell you that running under the street from Lulu's flower shop to this bank, there is a tunnel?
A tunnel?
What would you say if I told you that?
Well, I'd say, well, what do you know? That's what I'd say.
That's what I said when I found out about it. And that's why I say now that I mustn't ever forget to be grateful to jealousy, particularly since I've discovered that there's nothing between Lolo and Fodor. Or nothing serious.
And do you know what I'd say to that?
No.
A couple of rude words.
Yeah, but why?
Why? You find them scrabbling away together like a couple of chubby moles, digging away in the general direction of your bank vault, and you say there's nothing serious between them.
There isn't, I'm sure of that. I have Lulu's word. And besides, what could she possibly see in a fat little nonentity like Fodor? No, the only one who thinks it's serious is Fodor. And that's the whole point. Fodor is a dupe, a mere catch boy in the conspiracy.
Oh, yes, and who's the mastermind?
I am.
And what does Fodor think about that?
He languishes in ignorance. He knows nothing. And to think that he aspires, he dares to aspire to my position in the bank.
And how does Lulu fit in?
I must tell you that Lulu has given me some reason to hope that she will someday make me the happiest man in the world.
And how would she do that? By giving up Fodor or sending you a big bouquet of roses? Let's get down to cases, old man. Wedding bells can ring out from Buda to Pest and back again, but I won't be there to throw any rice unless I get paid. What is it exactly you want from me? Lessons on how to help Fodor and Lulu rob your bank?
Fodor's going to do with the robbing. And besides, it isn't my bank. I'm only a salary
officer. And then Fodor gives you the money to give to Lulu. Is that it?
Certainly not. That would be silly.
That's just what I was thinking.
No, every day Fodor is supposed to take the paper money from the various cages and place it in the vault.
Yeah.
This is his responsibility.
Yeah.
Tonight, however, he will not do this. He will leave the money outside the vault, hidden in a large filing cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the entire plan has been carefully worked out, I can assure you.
All I can say is this Fodor of yours is a very cooperative type of cat's boy.
Don't call him this Fodor of yours. He isn't. He's no Fodor of mine.
Have it your own way, old man. What comes next? You, I suppose. Huh? You come a half hour later with a dark lantern and a gunny sack. You wrap up the money, join Lulu, who's been waiting for you across the street in the flower shop, and the two of you, hand in hand, move off down the road into the sunrise and also into the very choicest Hungarian huskar. Hmm?
What is a huska?
A jail or prison, a place of forcible incarceration, a lockup for bad little bank robbers.
Not at all, not at all. It is Fodor who goes to prison.
Oh, yes, and how do you work that?
That is one of the things I want you to arrange.
Oh, I see. I'm going to have to earn that $20,000. I think we'll start by having it deposited in my name and in somebody else's bank, old man.
Why now? And why another bank?
Well, every bank in Budapest isn't going to be robbed tonight, so I think I'd prefer one of the others. And I'll take it now because I know you wouldn't want me to go to the police with what is, after all, a fairly sordid little story.
Good, but that's blackmail.
Oh, watch your language, old man. Blackmail's a nasty word. You know, all I want is protection for my poor little $20,000. I'll give you service for it, too, but I want to be absolutely positive that you're ready to meet your payroll.
Very well. You'll have your money, but you will have.
I'm going to need a few more solid facts, old man.
Well, it all began with this insane jealousy of mine for Fodor.
Oh, yeah?
I took to following him.
He used to go into Lulu's flower shop at night long after it was closed. And one time he left the shutter unfastened and I went in. There were no lights in the shop itself, but I could hear voices from the basement below. I opened the trap door very carefully so as not to be heard. And what do you think I saw?
You saw Lulu, Fodor, and three men all hard at work digging a tunnel.
Hmm. Yeah. How did you know?
I didn't, I guess. After all, you told me there was a tunnel.
But the three men, how did you know about them?
Still guessing. It's pretty obvious Mr. Fodor and Lulu couldn't dig much of a hole without getting some help. Tell me this. It was Lulu who persuaded you to call me in on this deal, wasn't it?
How did you know that?
Still just guessing, old man, just guessing. Now, let me guess on for a minute and stop me when I'm wrong. When you saw what Lulu and Fodor were doing, you went home and brooded for a while, and a few days afterwards, you confronted her.
It was the next day.
Oh, okay, it was the next day. Lulu admitted she was planning to rob the bank, but said she was just using Fodor, and you were the only one she really cared about, and if you joined the party, it's you she'd run off with, leaving Mr. Fodor holding the bag. An empty bag. How am I doing?
Oh, you're a clever man.
Sure I am. That's why Lulu had you sent for me.
You see, the idea is that Fodor will hide the money outside the vault and leave. Then, according to the arrangement, as he understands it, Lulu will come through the tunnel at night with her helpers and take the money back under the street through the tunnel.
Who did she tell Foda these helpers were?
She said one of them is her brother and the other two are cousins.
And what did she tell you?
That's what she told me. Why?
Nothing, old man. I don't know. Just give me one more guess, hmm?
Okay.
After Foda leaves the money, what you do is crawl back through the tunnel with a sack of currency clenched in your teeth. But no, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? You'd run into a couple of brothers crawling in the opposite direction.
I'm not to have anything to do with the tunnel.
Oh.
You see, Fodor leaves the money out just before closing time. That way, he's implicated, and we have a scapegoat. So, there's nothing to stop me from letting myself in with my key at night and walking away with the money. Who could suspect me? It's a perfect crime, Harry. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, yes, it's quite a crime, if you look at it in one way. But tell me about the brothers. What are they supposed to think about all this?
Oh, they don't know about it. Lulu hasn't told them.
But the news will reach them eventually, and what then?
They must be implicated somehow, along with Fodor. But I must be protected. And Lulu, that's what you're here for, Harry. Have another cigar.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as the Third Man. And now, Orson Welles, as the Third Man, continues with today's story, Too Many Crooks.
Naturally, the first thing I did after making my farewells to Mr. Feckety was to go across the street and pay a call on Lulu.
Harry, yeah? Listen to me carefully.
I'm listening, honey.
There's a little cafe on the hill above the old city. You know the place?
Mm-hmm.
There's a gold roost on the roof.
Well, what about it?
Go there and wait for me. You never can tell when Fodor or Feckety will be bursting in here. They keep jumping across the street to check up on each other and buying geraniums. Go to the cafe and I'll be with you as soon as I can close up.
What about the boys below?
Oh, what do you mean?
The construction crew, the Corellis.
Oh, Feckety told you about the Corellis?
I would have found out anyway, Lily.
Lulu.
Okay, what happens to them if you shut up the store? Isn't there a way out?
No, but they won't be finished work before I'm back. And besides, what they don't know won't hurt them.
Lily, or rather Lulu, it looks to me as though just about everybody around here is due to be hurt by what they don't know. I found the gold rooster and sat down on the terrace of the restaurant to wait for Mr. Feckety's fiancée. Over a glass of Tokai, I tried to add up the situation as of then. As far as I could see, the whole setup was like a Picasso painting. No matter how you looked at it, it was cockeyed and upside down.
Hello, Harry. Don't want anything for me. I haven't time.
Don't worry, Lily. I'm not here to celebrate. We can have our party after. I know who's going to pay the check.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Okay, Lulu. Now, here's all the sense I can make out of this little caper. You came here with a Corelli gang, right?
No, they came first. Oh. Then they sent for me to work in the flower shop for a front. The tunnel was their idea.
Then you sent for me. That was your
idea. Right.
Mm-hmm. Fodor thinks he's going to divvy up with the Corellis and marry you on the road.
Something like that.
And Feckety thinks something like the same something. The president thinks he's going to put it over the vice president. What about the construction crew?
You mean Walter and
yes,
the others?
The Corellis, the original burglars. What are they going to get out of this? According to Fekete, it's going to be the old double cross, but if I know you, Fekete's in for the same gentle treatment.
Harry, why should anybody get anything out of this except...
Okay. Book a couple of spaces for us on the first milk train out of Budapest, but be sure to get reservations on the bulletproof car.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Time marches on. A lot of trusting Hungarian depositors line up at the bank, leave their hard-earned pengos at the impressive-looking gilt cages for what they fondly believe is safekeeping, and hurry home to have their evening plate of goulash. Closing time comes and goes. Fekete doesn't leave. He just pretends to, and stays skulking in his office. Meanwhile, Fodor takes the big packages of pengos, which, as you know, is Hungarian for money, dutifully to the door of the vault. He slams the vault loudly, this being for the benefit of the janitor, who is deaf anyway and doesn't hear, and quickly stows the loot in the empty filing cabinet, which he has thoughtfully left nearby for just this purpose. He then goes home and passes a very restless night. The moon rises over the city and winks at its own reflection in the Danube. A lot of good Hungarians are in their beds. The others are all in a nightclub called the Arizona, dancing the Shardash. They do not come into this story, so we'll leave them dancing. Down onto the street, the Corellis, those adept bank robbers, continue to dig. They are putting the finishing touches on their tunnel, and we will not listen in on them because their conversation is very vulgar indeed. In his luxurious office, Mr. Fekete sits biting his nails and dreaming of a long West Indian cruise with Lulu in an adjoining deck chair. As the gang in the tunnel understand it, when the clock strikes 12, they are to open the secret trap door which they have previously prepared inside the bank, a section of tiling near the vault, go to the filing cabinet and take out the money which Porter has left there, thus eliminating the noise and inconvenience of breaking into the vault, and, first closing the loose tile after themselves, scuttle back with the loot under the street into the flower shop, out into the night, and as far away from Hungary as possible. As I say, that's the way the gang in the tunnel understand it. This is also the arrangement as Mr. Fodor understands it, with a trifling difference, that he expects Lulu to stop by for him with his share of the profits. Like Mr. Fekete, he is biting his nails and dreaming of tropical cruises. And what of Lulu? What of Lulu, indeed? It is Lulu's little plan to foozle everybody, Corelli, Fodor, and Fekete. She's led them all on to just this point. It is the point of departure. Lulu's departure. Lulu and all those neatly wrapped packages of pengos. The trouble is, it's all just a little bit too much for one little girl to handle alone, so Harry Lime's been sent for. Harry is supposed to assist at the general foozling of one and all, and then, in due time, of course, he's to be foozled as well. Lulu will send Harry off to mail a postcard, and when he gets back, Lulu will have continued her travels alone, with nothing to keep her company but the loot. That, as I say, is the way Lulu understands it. The clock, high in the steeple of San Stefano, strikes 12. This is the signal. Mr. Corelli, that celebrated expert with his two able assistants, starts toward the bank. The tunnel was not built for comfort, and the going on hands and feet is a trifle rough. There's a bit of genteel cursing, but hearts are high. At the sound of the clock, Mr. Fekete removes the bound bundles of money from their place of safety and checks once again the bolts and fastenings which keep the loose tile in its place. In the darkness, Mr. Fekete smiles. He is satisfied that, contrary to the Corelli's expectations, the bank end of the tunnel is firmly and irrevocably closed. Still smiling, he starts toting the money toward the side door for which he, Mr. Fekete, is the perfectly legal possessor of a key. On the outside, Lulu, with a high-speed car, is supposed to be waiting for him. Unfortunately, however, a moment earlier, Harry Lime, on the flower shop end of the tunnel, has persuaded Lulu to go down for a moment and tell the boys not to try lifting that trick tile for at least a half hour. Lulu hates herself now for not having analyzed the merits of this suggestion. She has plenty of time now to think this over because foxy old Harry in the flower shop has bolted down the trap door. The clock clock has stopped striking, of course, and Mr. Fegarty pops out of his bank looking for all the world like a jolly Christmas shopper with his arms loaded with bundles. There is a high-speed car waiting for Mr. Fegarty, all right, but it is full of strange gentlemen, and they are all dressed in uniforms.
Put up your hands, Fegarty. Put up your hands. You're under arrest.
But there's some mistake.
No, not at all, old man. No mistake at all. You see, gentlemen, just as you were told, there he is, and there's the money.
Come along now, Fegarty. We are taking you in.
You, Harry, a police informant.
Not a bit of it, old man. I wouldn't dream of telling on you. No, the cops got the tip-off from an anonymous letter, and you know how you spell anonymous? L-U-L-U.
Lulu. She did it. Lulu.
Lulu, that wouldn't be Lulu Hartz, would it? Alias Lily the Twister.
Yes, officer, I believe so. There's a reward offered for her capture, isn't there?
I should say there is.
What about the Corelli gang?
They've got the biggest price on their heads in Central Europe.
Oh, that's lovely. It's all beginning to add up when you throw in the generous reward Mr. Fegarty posted in the name of his bank this afternoon.
No, but you're not going to collect that, are
Why
you?
Why not, old man? After all, you put up the money for me to collect before the bank was robbed, didn't you? You also wanted me to thwart the Corellis, and if you yourself are foolish enough to go breaking the law, you'll just have to tell it to the judge.
I'll tell him plenty. I'll tell him about you.
Go ahead. I haven't broken any laws, remember, and you'll only help me collect my various rewards.
Matter of fact, Lyme, just what is your connection with this affair? What have you done?
Officer, all I did was turn a bolt on a trap door. Nothing at all, really. Just a twist to the wrist. And now, if you've got some spare handcuffs ready, I think we better open it up again. The folks down below may be getting a little fretful, and I think they'll appreciate a change of scene. If you'll come with me, officer, I'll show you the place.
Really, Mr. Lyme, I can't tell you how grateful.
Please, please, old man, don't mention it. Pleasure, I assure you. Won't you have a cigar?
Lyme returns in just a moment. And now, Harry Lyme.
You know, friends, I had thought of substituting those fat packages of Pengos for the same weight of old newspapers. But the rate of exchange wasn't so good on the Pengo just then, so I resisted the temptation. After all, as Mother always said, too many crooks spoil the goulash.
Thank you.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man. With zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives. And I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime.
Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man in See Naples and Live.
Once upon a time, there was an exquisite and huge emerald locket which spent most of its life looking out of the world from the rather fleshy neck of a Mrs. Donaldson as she waddled like a golden duck across the international social horizon. I had a rather strong desire to change the habitat of this particular locket from the neck of this particular lady to my own particular itching palm. It was Naples before the war.
Enter. Ah, you kept me impatient for an hour, Mr. Lyme.
I'm sorry, Signor Rubio. I just flew in from London, forgot to move my watch ahead.
It is my knowledge that you have been in Naples for 3 days now. But it does not matter. I am a man with a skill for waiting.
I'm going to be very brief. I won't waste any more of your time, old
man. Bueno. First, I must tell you that I have made all the arrangements to dispose of the Donaldson Emerald.
Oh, yes?
As soon as we possess it, I'll...
There's a small item I forgot to tell you about, Signor Rubio. I have decided to include you out.
I do not think I understand.
To be brief and simple, I've decided to dissolve our partnership, old man.
Oh, you're disposing of me?
Perhaps that's a nicer way of saying it.
I do not prefer to be disposed.
Naturally, you don't, but sometimes we get disposed, whether we like it or not.
Mr. Lyme, we began this enterprise together, and I think we shall finish it together.
You have never been more in error, old man. Now, you must forgive me for running off my...
A moment, Mr. Lyme.
Yes?
You recall Carlos?
I do.
And that young man from Eastbrook, I forget his name.
You mean Mannheimer?
Yes, if it were possible, they would be very sorry they were rude to me.
I'm now the most well-threatened man in Europe, and you have joined an innumerable caravan. Arrivederci.
Don't farewell me yet, Mr. Lyme.
Sorry, but I really must.
Do not force me to shoot you. If you take one more step toward the door, I'll be fired.
Now, don't be a complete fool, old man. If they found a dead man in your room, they'd hang you.
I will be easy with you. Just tell me where Mrs. Donaldson is, and I will forgive you your ungratefulness.
Rubio, I'm on my way out. If you fire that gun, the police will be here before you can get out of the hotel. Buongiorno.
There's a saying in this city, see Naples and die.
It only proves that life is very short and uncertain for us all. Goodbye, old man. Believe me, I'm not a professional hero. I was not at all concerned about Signor Rubio putting a bullet in me, not in his hotel room. I hurried to the pier where the Arcturus was about to dock. She was carrying precious freight, Mrs. Donaldson. I already made arrangements with one of the customs officials to hold Mrs. Donaldson up on a pretext of going through her luggage. A few thousand liras did the trick.
Oh, you stubborn man. I tell you, there's nothing contraband in my luggage. You've already gone through my clothes twice with your jetty hands. Amy, talk to this man. He doesn't understand a word of English.
My Italian is worse than his English.
Per increscio tanto, signora, ma è necessario. Ho istruzione di esaminare il vostro bagaglio. Deve aver pazienza.
That seems to be the trouble here.
Thank heavens, an American. I have no idea why this idiotic official is rummaging through my clothes.
That's just a matter of form, you know.
You think I was a smuggler or something. I've been to Naples many times, and there's never been this ridiculous fuss. I'll talk to the American consul. See to it that this man loses his job. I wonder if you could talk to him. That is, if you can speak Italian.
Of course, I'd be only too happy to. Let me see what I can do. Che cosa succede qui?
È di regola di esaminare ogni 25 passaggeri.
Oh, questo non è necessario, conosco il signore. Questa è la mia carta.
Ah, signore, mi rincresce tanto di aver dato alla signora tutto questo disturbo.
No, veramente. It's all right now, you're clear. Let me offer your bags.
Thank you ever so much. I don't know what I would have done without you. Amy, get one of those porters to help us with the luggage.
Yes, Mrs. Donald.
I have my car here. I'd be glad to give you a lift to your hotel.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't want you to bother.
Oh, no bother at all. One fellow American to another, you know.
Thank you. These taxi drivers rob you mercilessly.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. My name is Lyme. Harold Lyme.
I'm Mrs. Frederica Donaldson. I'm so glad we ran into you. A wonderful piece of luck.
Well, let's say we're well met. Loveliness was gracing my car. Loveliness in the form of the emerald locket around Mrs. Donaldson's neck, and loveliness in the form of Amy Collins. She was Mrs. Donaldson's hired companion. She had red hair and eyes to match the emerald, and she liked me. I think she liked me. Every so often I'd catch her eye. And she'd turn away, as if she were guilty of something.
Really, Mr. Lyme, I've never been so humiliated. Just standing there with that man poking away at my underthings, messing up all my clothes. Absolutely no regard for our feelings. Something should be done about this.
He was only following instructions. I don't think he was
doing anything he saw. He was just being malicious and perverse. If it weren't for Mr. Lyme, I don't know what would have happened. We're deeply indebted to him.
Oh, you don't owe me anything at all. I did what any other American would have done, Mrs. Donaldson.
I wish we could repay you for your kindness.
Well, you know, I think maybe you can.
Wonderful. Just tell us what it is.
Well, I've got to buy my sister a gift. It's her birthday. I don't know too much about jewelry, so I wonder if Either of you could come along and help me shop.
Of course we can. Amy does most of my shopping for me. She's very good at it.
That's wonderful.
I'm sure she'd be delighted to help you.
Don't you want me to help you get your things unpacked?
I'm already unpacked, thanks to that customs official. No, you go ahead. Just drop me at the hotel.
You don't mind, do you, Miss Collins?
Oh, no, not at all.
Good. It's a relief. Now, I'd like both of you to be my guests at dinner tonight.
That's very kind of you. We'd be delighted.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Mrs. Donaldson. It's my pleasure. We deposited fat Mrs. Donaldson in a room, and then Amy and I went shopping. I took her along to the Corso Vittorio Emanuele, one of Naples' better thoroughfares.
What are you looking for, Mr. Lyme?
Please, call me Harry.
All right.
May I call you Amy?
If you wish.
You don't sound very enthusiastic.
Please call me Amy.
That's much better.
What do you want to buy for your sister?
Some nice jewelry, a necklace or a locket, something like that. Mrs. Donaldson was wearing something pretty, something like that.
You don't know much about jewelry, do you?
Well, I know what I like. Most of the time, the things I like you can find in a dime store.
You won't find Mrs. Donaldson's locket in a dime store. It costs about $20,000.
$20,000? You're kidding.
No, that's a real emerald she has set in the locket.
Well, she must be crazy traveling with a thing like that flashing on her neck.
Oh, well, it's not very wise, but she's very sentimental about it. Her husband gave it to her just before he died. She swore to wear it every day of her life. She was very devoted to him.
Well, I suppose you think I'm pretty much of a chump about jewelry.
You have good taste.
I also have good luck meeting you.
Life is very strange, isn't it?
No, why?
Well, just half an hour ago, you and I were total strangers. Now here I am helping you buy a gift as if we'd known each other for a long time.
Well, there's nothing wrong in that, is
it? No, it's... Just at the moment you entered the scene, things seemed to move fast and efficiently.
You make it sound as if it were a force.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way.
I can go away and come back again and do it more slowly.
I suppose I sound foolish.
Perhaps it's because you liked me too soon.
Well, I
liked you too soon.
Well...
That's probably too fast for you, too. But you see, I'm a man who says what's on his mind. Probably not a very efficient way of talking to a gentle soul like you.
Oh, no, I prefer straightforward people.
All right, now, you be straightforward. What was your first reaction to me when you first saw me?
I was interested, perhaps, maybe intrigued.
That's better.
You have a way of condensing relationships quickly.
Well, if people like each other, they don't need a calendar full of time to tell them about it.
Good things grow slowly. Here's a shop.
Well, they all look pretty. A filigree pin. I like that. It's very nice.
Which one?
The one near the large cameo.
Oh, yes, it is very pretty. Shall we go in?
Wait. Let's look at the other things in the window.
Ah, I'm begging your pardon. I heard you conversing English.
We were talking American, a totally different language.
I'm trying to reach Via Salvatore Rosa. Could you inform me how to get there?
Sure, man. Turn right the next corner and go straight for three squares.
Ah, I'm much grateful.
That's right, all right.
Would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you very much. Just turn right at the next corner.
Oh, I'm unhappy to trouble you further, do you have a match?
I'm sorry, but I don't have any matches with me.
I have a light.
Mademoiselle is most generous. A thousand thanks.
Turn right at the next corner.
And three squares
and
down. Good day to you all. Perhaps
day.
We will meet again, eh? Good day.
He seemed most reluctant to leave.
Yes. An odd fellow.
Why did you refuse to give him a light?
I didn't like his face.
Did you ever see him before?
Why do you ask that?
We acted as if he knew you.
Well, I didn't care to know him.
I think you gave him the wrong direction.
It could be.
It seems that if he followed your directions, he would find himself in the Bay of Naples.
I'm sure it won't dampen his spirits. Shall we go in now?
Yes, of course. There's just one thing I'd like to ask
you. I'll answer anything you want.
What do you do for a living?
For a living? Oh, I'm a dealer in objets d'art. I wander through the world collecting the best things.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's often quite exciting. Now, let's go in and buy that filigree pin.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as the Third Man. Thank you.
now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man in See Naples and Live.
I bought a pin for 2,500 lira on the way back to Amy's hotel. She was thoughtful and not much inclined to do any talking. I took her by the hand. She didn't object to that, but she didn't react to the touch. Put it simply, she just let me hold her hand, nothing more. I suspected that Signor Rubio had made too strong an impression. It's essential now that I work fast. The emerald would have to be in my pocket tonight or not at all. However, I wasn't worried about Rubio. Strange enough, it was Amy who bothered me. I was beginning to be a little too fond of her. That was bad. I always make it a point not to be too fond of anyone in this world.
This is a lovely romantic restaurant.
I'm glad you like it.
How lovely, Miss Lyon.
I just asked the porter in the hotel. I know everything in Italy. The portiers are the best informed people in the country.
It's a little delightful. Don't you think so, Amy?
Yes, I do. It's charming.
Won't you have some more spumante?
Well, just a drop. I declare, just like champagne.
Yes, it's the Italian version.
It's so kind of you to give so much time to us, Miss Lyon. Really, it is. Amy, isn't Mr. Lyon just a dear?
I think he's most generous.
Oh, I'm having such a delicious time. I feel so happy. Happier than I've been since. I wish poor Benjamin were here with us. You would have liked him, Mr. Lyon.
I'm sure I would.
Poor Benjamin.
No, Mrs. Donaldson, let's not be sad here. Just have a little more spumante.
Oh, I really don't think we should. I'm afraid you're going to make us all drunk, Mr. Lyon.
Oh, Amy. I don't think another drop will hurt us. After all.
By this time, Mrs. Donaldson is becoming thoroughly relaxed. Spumante is a fine relaxer. I stirred the champagne with a wooden swizzle stick, the bottom of which was well laced with phenobarbital. My keynote for the evening, as you can see, was relaxation. Before the evening was over, my emeralded guest was going to be the most relaxed woman in all Italy. The spumante bubbled and frothed over as I stirred it.
I know I shouldn't have another glass, but
perhaps you had better stop, Mrs. Donaldson.
Never. I just feel so wonderful.
How about you, Amy?
All right.
A toast to us. May we always be as happy as we are now.
A toast to you, Mr. Lyon. You wonderful, wonderful man.
I patted her neck. I wanted her to get used to the touch of my hand against her neck. She withdrew a little. Then I could become super sensitive about the locket. As we drank, I studied the clasp on the locket. It was a simple device. You turned a tiny wheel, and it released the catch. Just a twist of the wrist.
The musicians are going to play again.
Come here.
Please, Mr. Lyon, no more spumante.
No, I have a special surprise.
Yes, Signora?
Have the musicians come over here.
Yes, Signora.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
That's a lovely gesture.
I thought you'd forgotten my first name.
Here they are, Signora. What would you like them to play?
What would you like, Mrs. Donaldson?
Oh, I can't think of a thing.
How about some Neapolitan songs?
Per favore, a monastero Santa Chiara. Canta per me. Very easy. They were completely at ease, and they trusted me. Amy stole her hand into mine as they played. It was really quite pleasant. I leaned back and relaxed.
That was just beautiful.
Very good. Thank you. Molto grazie. Here's something for the lads.
Oh, grazie, signor.
Did you enjoy it, Mrs. Donaldson?
They say divine.
I have a wonderful idea. How would you all like to go for a drive to Pompeii?
At this hour?
Yeah, it's only 10 o'clock. It's a full moon. It's quite a thrill.
At a door to go? Fascinating place. I've been there many times.
Yeah, I have to see it at night.
Isn't it closed?
Of course it is. We can go in through the back way near the arena.
I'm willing if Mrs. Donaldson is.
Try and stop me. What a marvelous idea.
Just one thing.
What is it?
Amy told me about your emerald locket. I think it'd be safer if you left it at your hotel. In the safe at hotel.
Don't you worry about it. I never take it off.
No, but really.
Except when I retire. Don't worry about it. It's perfectly safe. Besides, we wouldn't find any criminals in Pompeii.
No, I'm sure not. But all the same, I'd feel better if you left the
locket. No, I can't do that. Please don't fret about it.
All right, if you're sure.
Let's go right now.
Just let me pay the bill. Camiere?
Yes, signor.
Conto, per favore. Check.
Si, signor.
was less than an hour's ride to the ancient, extinct city of Pompeii, lying like a corpse at the foot of its killer, Vesuvius. We entered through the gardens of an ancient home. The moon shone down hard and white, lighting up the empty city.
Isn't it thrilling, beautiful, and frightening?
A chap by the name of Trebio Valenti used to live here. He hasn't been home for nearly 2,000 years. Here we are in Abodanza Street. It's in perfect condition.
Isn't it exciting? It's unbelievable.
Look at the gutter. You can see where the chariot wheels made deep ruts in the stone.
What a narrow street.
We can walk in the gutter. I don't think we'll be run over by any chariots tonight.
Where does this street lead to?
To the Forum.
What about those lovely buildings?
Well, they're old mansions. Belong to a couple of rich fellows. See the sign on the wall?
What does it say?
Post no bills in Latin.
And the sign alongside of it?
Down with such and such a tyrant. Time has worn away the name.
It's just amazing. It all begins to make me feel faint.
Now, don't you feel well, Mrs. Donaldson?
I feel fine. Just sleepy. Why should I feel sleepy when I'm so excited?
Don't you want to sit down?
Maybe I'd better.
We'll just rest for a moment.
I think we'd better go back.
We will, but first we'll let Mrs. Donaldson catch a few minutes' rest. There's a marble bench in the atrium of the Casa di Ceriali. He used to be an arrogant, rich man who didn't like the strangers visiting his palatial home, but I don't think he'll mind now.
Oh, it's lovely in
here. Here we are. You sit down, Mrs. Donaldson. Rest your shoulder against mine. There you are.
You're darling, Mr. Lyme.
Amy, if you walk into the other room to your right, you'll see some excellent frescoes. They're beautifully preserved.
May I have the flashlight?
Yes, here. Mrs. Donaldson was sleeping softly. I pressed my fingers against her neck to test her responses. There was no reaction. I tried it again so that even in her sleep she would feel no alarm, become accustomed to the feel of fingers around her throat. She slept peacefully on. I quickly unloosed the catch and I felt care not to slide the locket. Picked it gently off the neck. At the same time, I held her hand to divert her sensation of touch. It was done quickly. I was ready to make my silent departure, gently propped her against a pillar. Then I heard a sound that froze me. Footsteps. Footsteps, and they weren't Amy's. Who's there?
What's the matter?
I caught a glimpse of him. It was one of the guards. There's only one thing to do. Run. Stavros Davioni, I turned the corner and ran into one of the old Roman baths. I made for one of the rooms, expecting it to have another exit. It was dark, and I fumbled around. I had a very unpleasant feeling when I became aware that the only way out was the way I came in. I reined back. It's too late. My pursuer was standing at the entrance with a flashlight in one hand and the gun in the other. It was not a guard. It was a Rubio.
You see, Harry, fate has thrown us together again.
It's still around her neck.
The locket, please.
I just told you.
I'm not in my hotel now. This time I will kill you. Give me the locket.
I'm not a usually reckless fellow, but this time I did a very rash thing. I rushed him. He fired. The bullet tore a hole in my shoulder, barely touching my skin. I wrestled with him. He fell on the marble floor. His wiring very strong. In a few seconds, it was clear that he was in far better shape than I. Then he hit me a very rude blow on the head with a gun. And I abandoned the fight. For a moment, I just lay there thinking. Thinking what a very evil moment of my life this was.
Now, the locket.
Okay.
Thank you. And now I think I will dispose of you for having caused me all this trouble.
Halt! Alberto! Getta the revolver, signore, altrimenti tiro.
That's the police, Ruby, old man. You're caught.
Alberto.
Caught red-handed.
Come here. But the emerald.
It doesn't belong to you, old man. Better go along quietly with the police.
Corporal.
Look, there's some more of them coming through the door. No, he's putting up a fight. Remember what I've always told you, old man. Crime doesn't pay.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Lyme. Risking your life to save my locket.
Oh, that's all right.
You're the most brave man to chase after him in the dark, unarmed.
Well, I'd just gone to see where Amy was, and I heard the sound. There he was, deftly removing the locket from your neck.
I felt someone puffing around my neck, but I thought it was you.
Oh, really?
I was asleep, you know.
Yeah. Now, I had my suspicions about this Rubio from the first.
Does the wound hurt much?
Oh, it's nothing. It's a hole in my suit.
And a bird bump on your head. You poor boy.
It'll heal.
Amy, you haven't said a word to our hero since they arrested that Rubio man.
I'm just stunned.
Oh, I'm sorry we got you into this. I never should have taken you to Pompeii. It's all my fault.
Of course not. That terrible man would have tried to snatch the locket wherever I was. It's just a lucky thing I met up with you. I'm going to give you a gift. You just must take it. A £100 note.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it.
He'd make me very happy if you took it.
Oh, no, I absolutely...
Please, Mr. Lyne, please.
Well, if it means so much to you, I'll give it to my favorite charity. Now, here we are at the hotel, safe and sound.
Thanks to you. I must run upstairs. The whole thing has given me a severe headache. You will call me in the morning, won't you, Mr. Lyme?
Indeed, I will, Mrs. Donaldson.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, Amy, can I have a word with you?
I'll be up in a moment, Mrs. Donaldson.
Of course, dear. Good night again. And bless you, Mr. Lyme.
I'm sorry about this evening, Amy.
So am I.
Let's meet for lunch tomorrow.
No, Harry.
Why not?
I never saw the frescoes on the wall.
You didn't?
No, I didn't find them, and I walked all the way around. I saw you from the front entrance.
Oh.
Besides, a man who deals in fine arts would know an emerald locket from a dime store trinket.
Yes. Should have thought of that.
I was beginning to like you very much, Harry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not the kind of man you'd like to begin to like a little more.
It's a pity.
You want to see me again, Eva?
It'll never be any good.
Well, you might as well have the filigree pin.
What about your sister?
I haven't spoken to my sister in 10 years. She doesn't approve of me. Supposing I give it to you?
No, thanks.
You mean you wouldn't take it?
No, I couldn't.
Well, supposing if you didn't take it, I just threw it away.
Oh, but you shouldn't do that.
Oh, I won't. I won't. We were just supposing. Now, goodbye, Amy. There's no supposing about that. I suppose.
Harry Lyme returns in just a moment. It cost me about $100 to bribe the custom official, the champagne, and the gold filigree pin. The reward left me with a profit of $270-odd plus a bump on the head and a hole in my suit. I'd lost the lovely green emerald and the lovely green eyes of Amy. The emerald didn't bother me too much, but Amy. Oh. Amy. She nearly interfered with the great romance of my life. My love for Harry Lyme. Thank you.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.